Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of the show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I am Dr. Melissa Mireles, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
Nowhere to run, nothing to hide from the government's prying eye. Take yourself a summer holiday.
The Path to Authenticity proudly supports the iSpeak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit iSpeakMedia.org. Time here. Thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry. This is The Path to Authenticity, episode 116 for March 30th, 2021, which features a conversation with Dr. Melissa Mireles. So first, let me tell you, I've had some issues with my equipment over the last few weeks. This is a device that I'm recording with now that I'm using for the first time, still kind of working out the kinks. The other one, which I needed to replace, is what I use to interview Melissa. And you can hear the suffering sound quality a little bit, so forgive me for that, but I'm always working to improve the quality of this podcast, and we're getting there. So on this day in 1492, King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella signed a decree expelling all Jews from Spain. In 1858, a man named Hyman Lippmann of Philadelphia patented the pencil with an eraser attached to one end. In 1870, the 15th Amendment, guaranteeing the right to vote regardless of race, passed in Congress. Also in 1870, President Ulysses S. Grant signed a bill readmitting Texas to the Union, that being the last Confederate state to be readmitted. In 1943, Rodgers and Hammerstein's first collaboration, Oklahoma, opened on Broadway. In 1946, the Allies seized 1,000 Nazis attempting to revive the Nazi Party in Frankfurt. In 1950, President Harry Truman denounced Senator Joe McCarthy as a saboteur of U.S. foreign policy. In 1981, President Ronald Reagan was shot in Washington, D.C. by John Hinckley Jr. And in 1987, Vincent van Gogh's Sunflowers was sold for $39.85 million. So, I really had a nice conversation with Melissa. I kind of got into some silly stories, but she was fantastic. So, hope you enjoy it. Melissa Mireles.
Nowhere to run, nothing to hide. Government's prying eye. Take
had a chance to catch my breath before we started doing this. I was a little frustrated a little bit ago. I've had a lot of little stupid equipment issues over the last week or so, and I've let it get to me a little bit, but it's all good. So I'm happy to be here, and I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. And I found you on Instagram. You have a project you're working on called Off Mute with Mel, right?
I do.
And that caught my eye, so I started to check that out a little bit and tracked you down, and here we are. So tell us about Off Mute, first of all. I know we have other stuff to talk about too, but tell us about this.
It is a platform I started in January of this year with an intention of sharing people's stories, given that humans are so dynamic. I believe that no two humans are the same, but yet we have very much similarities. And I think it's important to be open-minded to other people's lifestyles. So I've decided to write people's stories from all walks of life. And so far, I've interviewed 25 people. I'm not sure where it will go, but I know I'm enjoying it, and I hope I'm making an impact somehow.
Wow.
But,
so, yeah. This is the second week of March. You've already interviewed 25 people?
Yes, it's been busy.
Yeah, that's a lot. You know, that seems like the pace of a working journalist or something.
Oh, man.
It does. And then you have a job, too. So, what do you do?
So I do a little bit of two things. I am a professor of business for a university in New Mexico named University of the Southwest. And I also serve as a project manager for UT Southwestern Medical Center located in Dallas.
Okay. So, and you have a doctorate. So tell me about that.
Yes, I have a doctorate in business administration and with an emphasis in healthcare management and leadership.
Mm-hmm. So why healthcare management?
I originally wanted to be a forensic examiner when I was younger.
Okay.
And I made a late transition my senior year of my undergraduate degree from, studying biology, and I somewhat lost my interest, and I took a business course. And I fell in love with it. And I realized that I can not only make a bigger impact. Of course, we love our doctors. I highly respect them. But I want to be able to lead doctors someday, lead an institution in healthcare management will give me the ability to do just that.
Wow. Good for you. So that's your vision to run a healthcare organization?
Correct.
Do you have a area of specialty that you are interested in, or just like a hospital? What are we talking about here?
So currently I am in the chief of staff somewhat role, but I am in the finance department and central administration. But it'd be nice to dip my toes into strategic initiatives, kind of forward thinking. Mm-hmm. That's where I always find myself, what's the next step? Where can we go? How can we expand? So that's my interest, definitely.
Okay. Well, that's something that could take you anywhere.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, good for you. So now, how did you get here? Is this something that, so when you were young, you thought you wanted to be a forensic examiner, right?
Correct.
So how young are we talking about that you had that vision for yourself?
Maybe I would say around 13 or so. We would watch Law and Order SVU, my family and I. Come from a big, beautiful Mexican family. We're six kids, and we watch it together. And I always found an interest to the medical examiner. And I always wanted to, help solve problems, help solve crimes, put bad people away. And I've always known I was interested in medicine and in healthcare. So that always drew my attention.
Okay. So where are you in the birth order? Six kids.
Second oldest.
Okay, so you're up towards the top. So how many boys?
My mom had two boys and we're four girls.
Okay. I'm the youngest of eight. So.
Oh, wow.
Five sisters. Yeah. So I'm, yeah, big family. What was that like for you? Having a, just one after another keep coming, right?
I loved it. If there's something I could brag about is my family. You know, we're very close. We're very family oriented. We have each other's back, great support system, and we all have very strong personalities. Every time we get together, we have such a great time. We didn't grow up in the greatest of environment, but we never realized how poor we were because we were so happy. So kudos to my mom.
Mm. And now you grew up in McAllen, right?
I did.
So way down right on the border, right?
Correct. Yeah, border town to Reynosa, Tamaulipas.
So what's that like, being a little Mexican girl growing up on the border?
Well, early on, I didn't really notice the barriers. Like I said, my mom did a pretty good job of, raising us, kind of doing what she could and us doing our best. It wasn't really until high school that I realized, barriers to education, barriers to healthcare. But, down in South Texas, everything's so cheap. Right. Mm-hmm. So the cost of living is very affordable. And I remember a happy childhood, and it was great being able to go across the border, have some delicious food, see some family, and then come right back. Mm-hmm. But, there were areas that were very dangerous in the Texas side and the Mexico side that I visited. My mom, I think she did a pretty good job of raising strong, independent women. For the most part, yeah.
Hmm. Why do you laugh?
Bobby.
I mean, you have a doctorate. Of course she did.
It makes me, she was tough on us. So I'm just giggling because, she was a single mother of six kids. So she kind of had us in order pretty darn well.
Oh, that's good. Good. Well, I'm sure you wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
So, What was your experience like in terms of race down there?
What's it So it's predominantly Mexican American in my area, and that's really all I knew. And it was normal to me. It wasn't until I left for college that I realized how big of a deal it was, the culture shock. But we grew up with strong traditions. I knew Mexican traditions like no other, and, like any other probably Mexican family, strong, values, celebrations, we grew up happy times, I think.
And then now, where did you go to school?
So I spent 2 years in Arkansas for my undergraduate at a university named Henderson State University. Mm. I played collegiate volleyball there. And at the time, I was the only Hispanic at that school. So
at the whole school?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a culture shock for sure.
Hmm. How small are we talking about the school? I mean, like 5,000 or fewer? Or?
I actually think it was around 8,000 or so.
Wow. I can't imagine that there are no Hispanic people.
There was not. Wow. And, but yeah, I had the greatest experience. I mean, at first it was somewhat scary. I called my mother and said, "Mom, no one looks like me. No one speaks Spanish. I don't know if I made the right decision," but my mom was tough. She said, "You're not coming back without a degree. So deal with it." And I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome that she did that, because one of the strong beliefs that I have about parenting, and I have a 14-year-old, mm-hmm. If we don't challenge him, who will?
That's right.
She knew you were capable of dealing with that. So, and she probably knew that if she let you off the hook, that you wouldn't respect yourself as much if you walked away from that and didn't fight through it.
I agree.
Yeah, that's really cool. So you stayed 2 years, and then what?
And then I transferred to play collegiate volleyball in a small Christian university called the University of the Southwest in Hobbs, New Mexico.
Okay. Which is and, where you teach.
Correct.
Okay. So how far is that from Dallas? Or you're doing everything over Zoom anyway, probably, right?
Correct. Yes. Driving wise, I would say about 8 to 9 hours from Dallas.
Yeah, Dallas is,
give or take.
Texas is huge. I mean, it's
Texas is huge.
Yeah. So you've lived in Arkansas and you've spent time in New Mexico, and that's it. Have you lived anywhere else?
My mom and us, we traveled when we were younger. She traveled to work the fields when we were young, but we traveled to Georgia for a couple summers. We traveled to South Carolina, Alabama, but I was fairly young.
Do you remember that stuff?
I remember, briefly, my mom working, the sugar cane. Mm-hmm. And driving at some point in time, driving trailers, stuff like that around for work. But just brief little clips, I wish I could remember more. I love sitting down with my brothers and sisters and sharing these stories because they're able to remember different things than I do. So I get to relive it all again.
Isn't that interesting?
I love it.
I talked to my oldest sister this morning. She's 23 years older than I am. So, we've lived in different worlds. I mean, it was completely different. But, it's interesting. I grew up in Indiana, which, farms.
Mm-hmm.
Farm after farm after farm. And, there were a lot of migrant workers that would mm-hmm. pass through every summer. And, so it's interesting that you went through that. I don't know that I've ever really spoken to anyone who had that life experience. And I've always kind of wondered, what's the rest of the year like for these folks? And what else always stood out to me is that I was talking to somebody about this not long ago. I don't remember how it came up, but I think we were talking about race. And I, I studied Spanish mm-hmm. in high school for 4 years. I love language. I like culture. I'm interested and I'm a people person, but it's almost like I worked at this grocery store when I was in high school, and at one time or another, most of my siblings did. But, the migrant workers would come in after work on Saturdays and shop and, pay cash for everything. And, Sunday was their only day off.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. on some level, it just kind of felt like they were invisible to most people, it just, it was just interesting. And I think about, the people who complain about jobs and all that stuff. And it's like, man, if most mm-hmm. Americans had to work that hard, they wouldn't be able to do it. There's something really honorable about that,
so well, thank you. I'll make sure to let my mother know.
yeah well, and I had fun too because I loved to speak Spanish, and mm-hmm. I was the only one who could communicate with them, really, so it came in handy when they would come in to cash checks or whatever, and
yeah, that makes me happy. You probably made their day without even realizing it.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I remember a couple times that, I used words that the literal meaning was right, and the slang meaning were Mexicans was a lot different. And they're like looking at me like, what are you talking about? Like, why are you saying that?
You know? So, it happens more often than what you probably think.
Yeah. Yeah. Like manteca and huevos, you know, I mean, they mean different things to different people.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. We won't go into
that,
but yeah, I mean, I remember once these two guys looking at me like, I mean, they just like, what is wrong with you? And finally they figured out, you know, and, they told me what word to use instead, but I can't remember what it was.
So, interesting.
Yeah. It's funny. And, you know, I had an experience where I can't believe I'm going to tell this story, but I had this experience where I was working on the landscaping crew at a golf course and I was 24, something like that, pretty young. And I'd moved to Florida when I was 23. So I was kind of, you know, in a transition stage, but most of the other guys on our crew were from Guatemala. And, and I'm in West Palm Beach. So lots of Central American people from the Caribbean, you know, there's lots of different cultures converging here. It's kind of cool. But anyway, so I'm working on this golf course, landscaping crew with these guys and you know, I go out, we're working on the sand traps, this one other guy and I, Jose, and he doesn't speak a lick of English, nothing, you know, and I'm at this point, I was semi-fluent at one point and I was about 4 years away from that. You know, I still knew stuff, but I mean, I wasn't going to journal in Spanish like I was as a senior in high school. So, you know, I couldn't remember the verb reír. I couldn't remember. Reír. Right. And and he was laughing. He was laughing. And I, you know, I've tried for the life of me to remember how to say laugh. And instead, I said, por qué tu ha 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 ha. And so from that point on, every time any of them saw me, they started laughing and they'd say, por qué tu ha ha ha. You know, it was so.
That's so funny.
Yeah. 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 It's, and you know, I don't know. I mean, I have some stories about language, but, you know, the other thing that people in America are so insensitive about culture, it just blows me away. Like before I moved from Indiana, I worked in construction a little bit and there was a Mexican immigrant who worked with us and, you know, he was introduced as Larry and, you know, of course I'm a guy, I speak a little bit of Spanish and I'm talking to him. His name was Hilario. And,
okay. I see, mm-hmm.
You know, so they just decided because it's easier for them to say Larry, they just decided to call him Larry instead. And that to me is like, I've always felt like, if you can't even bother to get a person's name right, how much could you possibly care?
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. So. But, I mean, the person themselves also have a responsibility. I mean, if that were me, if I had a difficult name, every time they mispronounce it, I'd correct them. Politely, yeah, but he didn't of course. Care.
He just laughed. Yeah. He knew how stupid they were. He just laughed at them. So, you know, I'm a recovering alcoholic. So, and that's when I stopped drinking when I was 23. So when I was around him, I was at my worst and, I would come in, I'd roll in like 5 minutes late to work and he'd already be there. He'd be working, pushing a broom around. And as I'd walk in, he'd say, "Borracho."
Oh no.
And he would laugh and laugh, borracho. And he'd sing songs about that. And yeah, it was, I have fond memories about it. He was teasing me, you know, it was funny. So yeah, enough about all that. Back to you. So you're going to run a hospital someday.
Someday.
Now, what is it about this other project that there must be part of you who like wants to write or something? Where'd that come in? What's that? What is it that project is satisfying for you?
You know, so I originally was thinking about this last year. You're referring to the off mute, correct?
Right.
Okay. And this was during the election, and I just saw so much hatred, you know, from all areas and all kinds of people around me. And I just said, we're more alike than what people think. You know, I respect everybody's views, to each their own. But I think it's been difficult for people to have conversations and just accept people that are not the same, correct? Mm-hmm. And for me, I felt like it was my duty to do something about it. And I've never been the one to shove anything down people's throat. I'm more of a, hey, have you thought about this? Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they were meaning it this way, you know?
Right.
Just kind of playing third person. And this is what initially sparked it. And my curiosity also of people's lifestyles. Why do people do the things they do? Why do they think the way they do? You know, what are their wants? What are their needs? What do they hope to accomplish before they leave this earth? And I personally don't believe in an afterlife. So I take, you know, what I have and I make the best that I can with it. So I guess it's just more my curious soul, maybe, and just interacting with people for sure.
Mm. Yeah, it's one of the things I've thought about many times over the last couple of years. Having my mom and dad are, you know, grew up in the Depression, you know, so they're, you know, I'm like one of the only siblings, the only probably sibling in my family who isn't technically like a baby boomer. You know, my parents were much older than my peers. And, but they would talk about, you know, there was this sort of unwritten rule that you didn't talk about politics. You didn't talk about religion, of course, sex too. But, you know, my parents taught me, you don't ask someone who they voted for. You don't even ask. That's their business. And I kind of wish we had more of that sort of attitude happening. Because there's so much judgment attached to all that. And it is a pretty dark time. It's something I've been talking to my mom about. She's 90. And, you know, she's seen a lot in life, and she's smart and has followed current events for her entire life. And it's just, it's interesting to talk to someone who's got a little bit more perspective and has lived through other things.
And that's right.
You know, there are, if you look at history, I mean, there have been other movements in politics. There have been other like significant political figures in America who, you know, really captured people's imaginations and at the end of it turned out to be not so great.
I agree.
You know? So they're there. They're out there. Like Joseph McCarthy and Huey Long's another one. But people, you know, people really loved them. And I guess we survived it, you know. we survived it. That's what gives me hope about it. And I just, I don't know. I wish people were more open, and I wish just being kind and good to people was higher on the priority list.
I agree.
Yeah.
You know, I found such an interest lately in psychology and kind of understanding how people, you know, why they think that way or, you know, things in that manner. But what I've realized is that childhood plays such an important role in who a person becomes. For example, you know, my household, my mom always held open dialogue. If I ever needed to voice something, she welcomed it. You know, I know people whose family were too much to one side, so they were a little bit of extremists and, you know, like I said, to each their own. Mm-hmm. They never felt completely comfortable sharing their thoughts. You know, so what I considered to be normal was very, very odd to my friends. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were disagreements at some point, and it just, I've come to realize that, you know, I have a duty for my children and their future generations to develop good humans,
right.
You know, lead with kindness. Yes, be hard workers, be noble. And you have a duty to leave this earth better than what it was when you came in. And I look forward to that, you know, if I've ever granted the opportunity to be a mother. But it's just interesting. I find myself thinking about this often, you know, seeing people interact, you know, how people speak to one another. And yeah, I guess it's my curiosity, like I said.
Well, this is, you know, this is my life you're talking about. So, I mean, I'm an addiction counselor by day, and I've been doing that for a really long time. And, you know, like on Monday nights at this time, I'm doing a men's group, you know, usually around relationship issues and stuff like that. So this is the kind of stuff we talk about, you know. Just last night we were talking about the boundaries that existed in everyone's homes and how that affected, you know, when you go into a marriage or a significant relationship, how forthcoming you are with your opinions or, you know, I mean, it, definitely childhood sets the stage for everything. It really does.
Yeah.
So to me, that's why it's important to look at it, you know, to be introspective, to, you know, to talk to other people about that stuff. But I think a lot of that, I think in my experience, a lot of that stuff, people will do great in life operating from that template until they reach a certain age. And then it starts backfiring on them and they have to adapt. You know, at least that's what I've seen. That's what I've experienced, you know? So like I grew up in a home where, you just did what your parents said. I mean, and if you didn't, like, I mean, you just didn't even think of not doing it. Like it was just not even an option. So then, you know, when I got to a point where as I go to, you know, make this enormous change in my life where I, you know, stop drinking and have to learn how to live again. I mean, the people who were helping me, I could say, I don't want to do that. And they, you know, my therapist would say, I don't give a shit. You're going to do it anyway. But she was smart enough to know that that's how I was trained. And I did it. I did it. I did the things that I needed to do to get better. And, you know, that's not who I am anymore, but yeah, it's funny how everything just kind of ties together. And it makes me sad when people, I think so many people just don't even want to think about it. They don't even want to talk about it. They don't even want to, you know, It's funny. I was talking to a buddy of mine a while back. He, you know, he was telling me he was going to ask a woman to marry him, you know, and he'd, he's probably 50 and he'd never been married before or anything like that. And, you know, I mean, he doesn't do what I do. He's just like a normal guy. You know, he doesn't, he doesn't talk about all this stuff all the time. And I was like, have you thought about talking to anybody about it? And he just kind of looked at me like he was kind of put off. And he said, you mean a therapist? And I said, well, yeah, yeah. And he said, well, why would I do that? And I'm like, I don't know. I just think that for me, anytime there's a significant event in life or a life transition or whatever, I'm going to take all the help I can get. And he's like, well, do you think there's something wrong with me or something?
Oh, no. I am right there with you, Tom. You know, there's still this stigma.
Absolutely.
You know, there's still stigmas everywhere. And I think the more we reiterate that, hey, it's okay to have these difficult conversations. We are not perfect. Yeah. Everybody's, you know, has battles. And it sometimes takes a professional to realize, to help us realize that there's, you know, other underlying things. And this is why we act. And this is why we do the things we do. And I think once we realize why, you know, what those things are, we have more control of our lives. And once we do that, we start making better decisions and wiser ones.
Or at least our eyes are open, you know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing that really, I'm pretty big on emotional literacy and, you know, the stigma thing is, I mean, just ridiculous. And, the whole idea that, you know, there's such a crying is so taboo in our culture that, and it's, I don't think there's, I mean, at least for guys, I don't really think there's anything more destructive than that, you know, because, and I'm, this is something I'm working on writing a piece about, but I have a lot to say about it because, you know, if we don't shed tears, we carry them around in our body and they have to come out. And like I was doing a Zoom session with a guy the other day and, you know, there were several people on it and I could just see it. I could just see it. It was like the tears were just dying to come out.
Wow.
And they did eventually. And, you know, it's like so many guys carry this anguish around and they get to the point where they've held it in for so long that they're stuck, like they couldn't shed a tear if they wanted to. And it just can't be good for you. And the other emotions always come out somehow.
Always.
And, you know, we'd rather have it come out in a way that, so yeah, that's a big, big thing that I feel strongly about. And one of the things that I've said to my son over the years when he was really little and he'd be upset about something. And of course, you know, when we hear tears, it triggers us. Nobody wants to hear a kid crying or, you know, it just, it's irritating. But, you know, I'd say just, you know, cry as long as you need to cry. But when you're done, be done.
I agree. 100%.
And you know, I mean, it's worked out pretty well. I mean, I think that's really what, but just the idea, the whole idea that women are more emotional than men or what, it's just all ridiculous. I mean, there are nuances, there are differences, but I just, the whole idea of a man in touch with his feminine side, I just think we need to,
I think it's important. All of that stuff. And yeah, that's a whole different issue as well. You know, society norms.
Like, why do we even call it that? It, you know, it's like,
exactly.
Yeah.
the term of real men don't cry. I will destroy that argument. It's just, I would love to read your piece once you come out with it.
Well, I think it's important. But, you know, the thing is, and this is something I talk to about the guys that I work with, and like, what takes more courage? Shedding tears when you're afraid to, or holding it in because you're afraid to. I mean, you know, for a guy to break down in front of his wife or in front of another group of guys, like, that takes courage. It does.
I agree.
I don't care what anybody says. And you know, anybody who would fight me on that is, you know, they don't have any credibility in my world anyway. You know, like, yeah. But, yeah, and the whole thing going back to therapists and getting help, one of the things that the conclusions that I've drawn is, you know, we're all kind of screwed up anyway. It, all of us, you know, we all have our own idiosyncrasies and neuroses. And so it hit me. I was dealing with this relationship stuff and I was out to dinner with a buddy of mine, and I remember going to the bathroom. I think I talked about this on another recent episode, but it just, it hit me while I was away. Like, why am I talking to him about this? Like, this is a guy who's been married and divorced 3 times. Mm-hmm. And like, he's picking apart this relationship that I'm talking to him about. And he's telling me, you know, why I shouldn't do what it is I'm going to do, whether, no matter what his opinion is. And it was just like, you know what? I'm fine on my own. Like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not going to people like this unless they're professionals and I'm paying them.
And paying,
you know,
for them.
that's the difference, you know, like, but I also had to get to the point where I trusted myself enough to, to do that. And that for me was a difficult thing, but you know, we all have stuff that we struggle with. And yeah, I've had a ton of therapists on this podcast. It's, I feel like, the whole point of this podcast is that I think the world would be a better place if we were doing what we actually want to be doing with our lives. People would be happier, and fulfilled, and doing things from a place of love and passion. And instead of, you know, punching that clock because I got to pay the rent, you know, or whatever, it's a totally different experience to do something you're really into than to do something that you just have to do.
I agree. And I've always said that not everybody starts the life race at the same starting line, but you know, you deal with the cards you've dealt with and you make the best of it and live your purposeful life.
Yeah.
So I agree.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we have different seasons in our lives too. You know, I mean, I think that's important to remember, but yeah, I wanted to create a podcast that people could listen to where there are real conversations taking place like this. And maybe somebody who has trouble leaving that job that they hate to go do what makes their heart sing can hear somebody else who went through that and be inspired to do it, or some other significant life change, whatever it is.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
So I think it's important. I really do. I think, you know, from a spiritual standpoint, I think those things that are on our heart to do, God gives us those. And when he gives us those, it's like we have what we need to carry it out. And when you start to do it, the universe marshals all the forces for you, you know, it's like things fall into place. It's amazing. So tell me about what's the timeline for the podcast here.
Oh man, I am hoping to kick it off within the next 3 months.
Okay.
So I am adjusting. And I know one of the questions you asked in the questionnaire was, what's something you're struggling with that you're attempting to work on? And it's definitely a work-life balance.
So does that mean, so would you characterize yourself as a workaholic? Let's talk about this.
I would say yes.
Okay.
And with, you know, I'm in between, I am in my late 20s. Mm-hmm. I am battling between living my best life and making sure that I have a set foundation for my future family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's something that I'm working on, and I haven't found a solution yet, but I have projects in the works that will give me a little bit more liberty, and that freedom will allow me to do a lot more things with less effort. I mean, it's in time commitment, but right. still just even better results maybe. So that is the goal. Okay. And I would love to kick off my podcast this year. I know that it would be good for the audience. It'd be good for the world. It'd be good for me. And I think people need to have difficult conversations sometimes. And like you said, you know, having that positive impact in someone's life, just a simple conversation can be life changing for another.
Yeah.
And I'd love to be a part of that.
So do you have the equipment yet?
I do not.
Okay.
I will might need your
help. Well, I was going to say, I'm more than happy to help. And I figured it out on my own. Like, it's funny because I remember telling somebody about this podcast, and I was maybe 10 or 12 episodes in. It was a colleague from another state. It was at a conference, and I'm gonna start a podcast too. And, you know, long story short, she had hired a podcast coach who advised her on what equipment to buy. She built a sound room in her basement and 6 months later hadn't recorded a thing, you know, and this is somebody who has a really cool angle and could have a like home run podcast. And you know, for me, the whole thing was, I'm not going to launch this until I'm ready to be committed. To
exactly.
Do an episode every
exactly.
Week. And so once I got there, you know, then I, you know, started putting everything in place. And so I found, an easy way to host it without having to like go to one of these podcast hosting things and paying a bunch of money. And, you know, I've figured out how to get it done in a relatively simple way. And I know there are a few things I would do differently looking back. Nothing terribly major, but enough that I'm happy to share that kind of stuff with you if you're interested. One of the most important things to me, I talked to you about this a little bit before we started the conversation, is just the sound. Mm-hmm. Because to me, there's so many podcasts out there that are even done by serious media outlets that just sound bad. You know, they just sound like somebody's recording them in an enormous tin can or so, you know, and I didn't want that. I wanted it to sound good. And so to have people relatively quickly after I launched this thing come to me and say, I want to have a podcast, but I want to make sure it sounds like yours. What do I got to do to do that? And it wasn't all that hard. And, part of it was learning how to use the sound software and getting the right microphone and stuff like that. It could be better. I'm at a place where I'm going to be upgrading some equipment soon, but it doesn't have to cost an arm and a leg. It doesn't have to be terribly, time consuming, but yeah, you know, I mean, you have a voice. It comes through on those Instagram posts that you do, you know, the artwork that you made, and then the mugshots of the people, and the way that you write. I mean, it comes through. You have it, you know?
Thank you. I appreciate it. And, you know, when I went into this, I said, I hope I do them justice, because, you know, I give full disclosure. I have the interviews with them, and I tell them, you know, it's more of a conversation. I don't, nothing to prep. I want you to, you know, just be raw, be yourself, be your authentic self. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I start off with basic questions and I hit a little bit deeper ones, and people get nervous. And I said, it's okay. It's fine. But when it's all said and done, I give them full disclaimer that these small paragraphs will not do their beautiful life justice, you know, and mm-hmm. there's always that little nervousness of disappointing, you know, of disappointing them, mm-hmm. possibly with your writing. And you know, I give them full authority to edit. Right. Of course, you know, making sure everything flows, grammar, et cetera, but they do have the ability to put their own twist to it if I didn't capture their vision correctly, because that is their name, you know, that is their face on there. And I think it's, of course, out of respect, but yeah, I've enjoyed it. And, you know, I'm excited because I have a very diverse audience coming. So from, you know, homeless individuals to multimillion investors to people that have, you know, jobs that people would find very odd and strange. And to me, everybody's on a different path, and I want to be able to document them all.
Mm, that's cool.
Wish me luck.
No, you're going to do great. I mean, it's you already have it. You're already, I'm surprised that you're not already recording stuff and getting it out there, because it's at the things that I've seen look very well done, you know?
That's, I mean, very kind. Thank you.
I'm serious though. I wouldn't say that if it wasn't true. You're sharp. It's pretty apparent. And, yeah. And it's interesting too. It's just, I like that it's, you know, connecting with people.
Connecting.
And this is part of what happens with this, because like I had an episode that came out today, with a therapist who I found on Instagram, who I just liked the stuff that she had to say. And, you know, next thing you know, here she is. But, you know, we just kind of clicked and were, you know, had the conversations tend to be deep anyway, mm-hmm. but we were right there, and to the point where, you know, most of the time when I have therapists on, they have their therapist hat on. But she was, not that she didn't have it on, but she was a person too. She was talking about the stuff that she struggles with at times, to the point where, you know, looking back, there were a couple things I cut out, you know, because I also say to people, you know, if there's something you're not comfortable with, say so. I want you to be happy with this. And, you know, it's, at the end of the day, you're paying attention to people. You're shining a light on someone who probably isn't getting that kind of attention. And so it's a flattering thing. It's a special thing. And I think what you're going to find, one of the really unexpected gifts of doing this podcast, is that I will have... Like I have a buddy who I had on a while back, and I was somewhere with them, and his wife and daughter came later, you know, and his daughter pulled me aside at one point and said, "Thank you for doing that with my dad," you know.
Aww.
I mean, it meant a lot to her, because she got to hear a side of him that she doesn't know. And, you know, I've had the same thing happen with, you know, guys who got to hear their mom or their grandma, And one of the interviews that I'm in the process of scheduling here is with my mom. I'm going to have my mom on here. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to that because the same thing. You know, first of all, I lost my dad years ago.
I'm sorry.
And thank you. And, you know, he was much, much older than I was. And then, you know, when my early 20s, I moved away. So I just wished I wish I asked him more questions about him. I wish I knew more about his life and what it felt like to be him. And, you know, I'm not going to let that happen with my mom. I'm not going to do
that. I love that. I will take that. I will take that. I have I'll be traveling soon with my partner and, you know, we're going to see his grandparents. So I will definitely make time and sit with them. You know, yeah. I'm sure they'll share some wisdom, some guidance that'll prohibit me from making uneducated decisions. That's beautiful. Yeah. I'm sure you're going to, you know, find out more about your mother than you probably didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we're close anyway, but still, I mean, she's 90 years old. Like that's, and we don't talk about most of the time what her childhood was like. Mm-hmm. You know, we've touched on a little bit, but, and, you know, I have all these siblings who, you know, they haven't heard that stuff either, I'm sure. So it's going to be a gift to them too. One of the things she said to me was, I don't want to say anything that's going to make anybody mad. I'm like, come on. We're not doing that. And I just told her.
We're out of the house, Mom. Don't worry.
I just told her exactly what I just said to you, that what this is about. Part of this is because, you know, I wish I asked Dad more questions. And she said, you know, I wish I did too. She was, and I mean, she was married to him for 55 years when he died. And felt the same way. So that actually was a little bit reassuring to me to know that I wasn't the only one who didn't get to know him as well as I would have liked to. Mm-hmm. But so you got some exciting stuff happening.
Yeah, and staying busy.
I'm interested to see what you end up doing with your career, you know? I mean, Texas has some interesting healthcare organizations. Seriously, no, like,
yeah,
you know, like working in behavioral healthcare. I mean, there are agencies out there that I've worked with. You know, there's some great mental health resources out there, like Menninger Clinic, and there's a place called J. Flowers Institute in Houston. Mm-hmm. You know, there's Origins Behavioral Healthcare in South Padre Island, and I mean, there's a really strong history of addiction recovery in Texas, too, that has its own identity that's true to the Texas character. You know, Texas has its mm-hmm. own everything, and it's like that. Yeah, it's got a lot of cool healthcare stuff. So I'm sure you're going to have lots of options, and you know, it sounds like you're pretty sharp, so I'm sure anyone, I don't know.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, my guess is, I mean, sometimes you meet somebody and you just know that they're the person you would want to build a business around. Mm-hmm. And I imagine in your world you're one of those people, and it's gonna happen, you know?
You know what, Tom? I had this conversation not too long ago. I have the greatest mentor, and he happens to be my boss.
Your boss?
My boss. Mm-hmm. The vice president of finance. And I thank him often because, you know, he takes the time to walk me through things that I don't fully understand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a person at that level really doesn't have the time, but he goes above and beyond because, you know, either he sees the potential or hopes that I get it.
Right.
You know, I also serve as his right hand, essentially his advisor. So together we're stronger. But I say this because I've been very fortunate in my life. I've always had people behind me clapping for me, whether it was my professor, whether it was my mother, whether it was my boss. I've always have had that. And you know, I feel like I have a duty to, you know, one day where I am in a position of authority.
To clap for other people.
Exactly. Yeah. And that to me will be part of my legacy. And, like I said, I've been very fortunate. And without those people clapping for me, I don't know if I'd be where I am today, to be honest. Mm. But.
Well, I think, and I've had those people too, and I've had those mentors too. And you know, the mentors like that come to mind for me are ones that believed in me more than I believed in myself.
Exactly.
And, you know, in ways that like completely blew my mind at times. And, yeah, it just, there's nothing like it. One story comes to mind where I was writing this business plan for this company that I was working for about opening a satellite office in another state, essentially healthcare and an outpatient clinic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this was a company that's been around 50 plus years and deep history and tradition. And I wrote this business plan, and in my mind, I was like, well, you know, I don't know if they're going to do this or not, but I'm going to make sure that if they decide not to do it, it's not because I didn't do a good enough job on this business plan. And, you know, it was like 130 pages long with wow, all sorts of appendices, and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And, when, you know, it was a company in Nashville, and I flew up there to do this presentation to the executive team, PowerPoint and the whole nine yards, which was a big deal for me at this point in my career. And I met my boss for lunch before, and I had already emailed it to him or shipped it to him or something. And he'd looked at it, and I said, so what do you think? What are they going to do this? And he said, I think if you want an answer now, you will get it, and it will be a no. But if you can be patient, and it was, you know, it didn't ultimately happen, but I got a lot of recognition for the project. It went way up to the tippity top of the board of directors who wow, ultimately made the decision that he didn't want to go in that direction. But also, I, you know, remember sitting in the San Antonio airport with them one time saying, listen, man, I read that, and I was really impressed. So, you know, a lot of good came from it. But it also, like, the people who've been around a long time have the perspective to say, you know, be patient. Let things happen. If you force it, it's not going to work. Those kinds of things. Play the long game, you know, think three steps ahead of, and also, you know, me, I'm all about the right people.
Agreed.
We want the right people. And if you know Jim Collins, do you know, Good to Great, that book?
I do.
Yeah. That was a company where they had a bunch of us read that book. And, you know, it was like they hired me, and I took this job. I didn't really want it, but I wanted to work for them. And I come to find out, you know, they just wanted me on the bus. They knew it wasn't the right seat either, but they wanted me on the bus. And eventually I was there a long time, and it ended up, I moved on, and there was like a regime change and all this stuff. But it was still the best employment experience I've ever had in my life. And it was people who treated me with love.
And it's that work culture.
Family mm-hmm. was first. People were first. And I would have done anything for these guys. Anything. And, you know, so they didn't have to worry about people working hard for them because they engendered such loyalty, you know, it just wasn't even a question. But it's really, and I think, you know, the generations before mine there is more of the fear-based approach where, well, you better. Before that, I had a supervisor who was basically telling me I wasn't a good manager because I wasn't yelling at people.
And interesting.
You tell him if he doesn't do that, we're going to hire somebody else. And like, come on, like, that's not me. I mean, another part of leadership is knowing who you are and what kind of leadership style you actually have mm-hmm. and what works for you. But to me, it has to start with caring about the person. You know, that's the point. I don't know how I got off on all this, but what I wanted to get to was, you know, you're talking about your responsibility to be that person for somebody else. And, you know, for me, you know, this is part of my purpose, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, so it started out like helping one other person stop using drugs or turn around their life or whatever, you know, and then one person at a time. And then it's next thing you know, I can do groups or I can work with their entire family. But at some point, you know, it becomes about to be effective and to broaden the sphere of influence, training other people to do it, you know, to replicating ourselves, mm-hmm. right? And then like the writing, the podcast, all of it is to help more people. That's, you know, that's what it's about. People need help. And you're going to find your ways of doing that too. And it's going to be awesome. I can tell already. So
I sure hope so.
No, it's going to be, it is. So looking back, when was there a time when the younger Melissa would have needed some support or a word of advice, or when would that have been? And what would you go back and say to her?
I mean, first one that pops into my head was my career transition. You know, I was on my way to go to medical school, and then I decided not to go, and I took the leap of going from an undergrad in biology to an MBA in finance, and that is kind of unheard of. And I said, I listed a list of just pros and cons, and I talked, spoke to the dean and spoke to my parents, and, you know, I told him, I said, I don't know if this is my calling or is this just, it just doesn't feel right anymore. And, you know, I was a couple of weeks away from medical school. I didn't know if I was doing the right thing, but I took that risk and I followed my gut, and I don't regret that decision.
Are you happy?
I'm happy.
That's what
very happy. Yeah. Yes. I mean, there's other times as well, you know, decisions in the sense of, should I leave, you know, should I leave for college out of state when I know my family is struggling financially? And, you know, and I'm not talking about, you know, the simple things. I mean, we owed a lot of money on the house, you know, mom was living off welfare and there was barely any food, and just, I mean, the lowest of the lowest you could probably imagine. But, you know, I felt like that sense of responsibility to stay, but I knew that if I wanted to, you know, make a difference and, you know, get my degree, I had a free ride. And, you know, sometimes I look back and I'm like, did I make the right decision? But I said, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. But I had people that helped me make that decision. You know, they were forward thinking, and, you know, they, when I spoke to these individuals, they reminded me that it was a safe place, and, you know, a place where if I needed to cry or, you know, just have those difficult conversations. But looking back at it now, you know, I don't regret them at all. And I would tell my younger self to definitely be kinder. You know, I've always been hard, ridiculously hard.
On yourself.
I wasn't, definitely. If I'm not first, I'm last. I'm a competitor by nature. And I just tell myself, be kind, you know, be kinder to yourself and trust your gut and keep working, because you are destined for greatness.
I love it. Thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate you taking the time. It's been nice.
Thank you for the invite, and I look forward to seeing your journey. And
yeah, and I'm going to get to be featured on your thank you for I'm looking forward to that too. It's going to be fun.
So excited, and I'm glad that we're doing this. I'm sure that we're making an impact in other people's lives. So I thank you, and I hope that when people listen, they take a little bit of good away from this.
Absolutely. Right, there you go, Melissa Morales. So, you can find the podcast on Amazon, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Listen Notes, Overcast, Pandora, Podbay, Podcast Addict, Radio Public, Spotify, Stitcher, and on YouTube. If you enjoy listening to the show, please take the time to leave a rating, a review, or both on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, really anywhere you listen, if they enable you to do that. I appreciate any positive feedback I can get about the show. If you know someone who would enjoy this episode or another, please consider sharing it with them. If you have questions or comments, you can call area code 561-247-4757 to leave a message. I'd love to hear from you. Value any feedback you have to offer. For early access to the newest episodes, as well as unedited interviews and other supplemental content, you can support the show on Patreon for as little as a dollar a month right now. That's patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. I want to thank the band Punk Rock Opera, whose music you hear throughout the show. It's used with permission from the artist and under a Creative Commons license. Thank you to our sponsors, The Manor and Windrose Recovery. I want to thank Wendy Chen at Equivox for digital support. And The Path to Authenticity is proud to support the iSpeak Media Foundation. Visit us at thepathtoauthenticity.com. You can email the show at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. Playlists on Spotify. We're all over the place. So, thanks for listening. Thanks for your patience with the sound. It'll get better. Take care of yourselves and be nice.
I died on the street. We need a guitar player.
The Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.